Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome to another week of Dish the Dirt. I have a wonderful episode to share with you this week, but before we do that, there's just a few thank yous that I would like to do. Thank you to everyone who came to the Farmer Florist Dinner in Geelong on Friday evening. It was really, really lovely to meet you all and to hear you sharing your stories and your knowledge and insights into the industry and just having a good old laugh. It's always wonderful to get together and build a bit more community within the flower industry. So thank you so much. Thank you to Emily from North Street Botanical who came along and shared her knowledge with everyone there. She answered quite a lot of questions and I really, really appreciate your time, Emily. So thank you so much. Thank you to Grown Not Flown who were also there and shared what's coming up for them. It was wonderful to hear and yeah, it was a great evening. At the moment, the Australian Podcast Awards are happening and you can go and vote for me or vote for Dish the Dirt for the Listener's Choice Award. All you need to do is head to their website, australianpodcastawards.com. I'll put it in the show notes and just type in Dish the Dirt and you can click vote and it takes 2 seconds. It would be lovely because it would just get Dish the Dirt out there a little bit more and we could, you know, spread Australian flower farmers' voices even wider, and that would be great. We've got an industry day coming up on February the 25th, and it would be wonderful to see you all there. It's in New South Wales. Southern Highland Dahlia Flower Farm are hosting it, and Jen has been amazing so far. It's going to be a really, really great day. So please look out for the tickets. They are on sale from the 11th of November. So keep an eye out for those. There'll be a link up on my Instagram. If you can, please send me an image for the calendar, which we are shooting this week at Bloom Into You Flower Farm. We're doing a few shots up there. So yeah, please, I would love to see other flower farmers in the calendar. So it can be from all around Australia, doing whatever you want. Doesn't have to be pretty. It can be just whatever. Be wonderful to see. You can shoot those through to dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com. Let's get into this week's episode. This week I share with you a really wonderful story from New Zealand. It's about a flower farmer collective. And it is one of the reasons why I decided to mix this season up, because I think this episode covers a lot of topics that come up with smaller scale flower farmers. It covers pricing and it covers burnout and it covers making profit from your flowers. And really what these ladies are doing is something I think very unique, and I hope that it really gives people something to think about. So, Three Valley Flower Farms is a collaboration of flower farmers located across Cadrona, Mangawera, and Lindis Valleys in the Upper Clutha Basin. With a love for all things floral, they're passionate about growing stunning seasonal blooms. They're consciously growing artisan garden flowers sustainably that are full of character for their local flower community. The farmers are Anna from Cadrona Fresh, Jenny from Studio 24 Botanicals, Sarah from The Joy Farmer, and Vera from Alpine Blooms Farm. It was a wonderful chat, and let's get into it. Let's get into your elevator pitch. Just explain where you're situated, where your farm is, and yeah, a bit about you, I guess.
All right, so Alpine Blooms will go first. So we are in Mangawera Valley and on Camp Hill Road, just neighbours to Jen at Studio 24. And about 1,000 square meters. I don't know what it is in hectares. And growing pretty much everything because I can't help myself. just look at the pretty picture and try and grow it.
Yeah, amazing.
But yeah, quite straight from the beginning, it was all about tulips. So I've got about 8,000 coming to an end now. And then, you know, after that, we'll have peonies, lilies, delphinium, all the annuals that can possibly grow, and dahlias, but on a small scale compared to Studio 24.
Just quickly, do you grow everything outdoors or do you have hoop houses?
Yeah, no hoop houses. I've got a tiny little one basically just to start the seeds, and I've got some ranunculus in there now. But yeah, it's all outdoors.
Okay. And what's your climate like where you are, or does everyone have generally sort of the same climate?
We're roughly the same, but there is microclimates in three different valleys.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an alpine climate in a way. So it's very dry and windy in summer. Probably gets about 30 is normal. 30. Yeah. 37 is probably a bit too hot, but yeah, around 30.
Yeah, great.
And then in winter, we don't get snow on the ground more than 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
This winter was exception. We probably had it about 5 or 6 times snowfall.
Oh, wow. On the ground. Yeah.
And generally, it melts straight away. Again, this winter was exception with a couple of days. Just snow set there with good frosts, but probably minus 10 is probably the coldest we got.
Yeah, wow, that seems very cold coming from Victoria.
Yeah,
well, for me, there's parts of Victoria that would definitely get that cold, but here it doesn't. So yeah, that sounds pretty chilly.
Anyway, so I am Jen, and I've got Studio 24, and I'm literally not even 2 km down the road from Vera at Alpine Blooms. So I have been a florist for over 25 years, and we bought a block of land which I always wanted to grow on, because we, as a florist, you always want to have your own blooms. It makes a financial sense to do that. And I really started out just doing dahlias, because that was something that, being so far from the market, it was hard to get anything that was really fresh, I found, was really difficult. And then started to think, well, maybe I could grow other bits and pieces. And then COVID hit, and I was like, well, actually, growing flowers seems to be a lot more fun than doing weddings. So that's pretty much what I do now. I've probably got, I don't know, maybe 15 or 16 weddings a season now, which is a nice manageable number, I think. We'll see how that goes this year.
Yeah.
And what do I grow? Just a good array of annuals, with your perennials, and probably putting in about 2,000 dahlias this year, so, and growing a lot from seed as well. So
yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
And do you sort of have the same climate, I guess, as Vera, in that little microclimate? Yeah,
identical actually. Yeah
wonderful. Yeah. And then who's next?
Sarah from the Joy Farmer.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you? So I'm based in Terrace at the bottom of the Lindis Valley, and my growing situation's a little bit different. I'm growing on my family's high country station. Sort of I've tacked on to the back of my parents' original homestead garden. So I've got a lot of space, but I've chosen to keep it really small at this stage because it's all been a bit of an experiment. And so I've been able to access a lot of established perennials and shrubs that were already in my parents' garden. We've sort of been there, I'm fourth or fifth generation. So, and my grandfather was really into his trees and plants, and there's been lots of gardeners. So there's lots of interesting things already there established, which has been really helpful. And then I have obviously started growing bits and pieces. We're obviously very far away from the florist market, so some things don't ship well. So I started thinking about what things would be better to grow here that weren't easily accessible to the florists. So it's things like, as Dahlia, as Jen mentioned, the dahlias don't ship well. And Queen Anne's lace and things like that, that they can't get as easily from the markets because they don't last. So that's sort of me and my climate. I'm slightly hotter and more arid, if that's possible for Central Otago.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my flowers sometimes are, well, at this end of the season, I'm a wee bit earlier. Like my tulips come a week or two earlier than Vera's. And I've just got a, I think I've also just got a little microclimate right exactly where I'm growing as well, even within our high country station. It's seems to be a little bit more sheltered and a little bit warmer. And overall, it's quite similar. It's that sort of intense sun in summer and quite cold.
And then who's my last farmer?
She's not actually here. But she's the third valley, so we got her. She's going to, I guess, enough. Talk about her.
What's her business name? And
so it's Anna, and she's from Cadrona Fresh.
Yeah.
And she grows in Cadrona Valley on the main highway, Cadrona Valley Highway. Just before Crown Range kind of thing.
And beautiful.
Her climate is colder than us in the middle and colder than Sarah. So she actually doesn't really bother with spring blooms because by the time they bloom at hers, it's way too late and people don't really want tulips and daffodils and all that sort of stuff by October kind of thing. So she specializes in dahlias, roses. Her roses are amazing. Garden roses. Again, it's all grown outside. And then she does perennials, a little bit of annuals. I think she said about 8,000 gladiolis going in this in the ground this year. So, gladiolis amazing.
Amazing. So you all live in paradise anyway. Let's get that out of the way. Hard with some of the climates that you have to deal with. What is it like for New Zealand florists to buy flowers? Because it's probably very different to how Australian florists buy their flowers, I would say.
It's probably a little bit different in our situation here because we are so removed from market. I think other areas are a little bit closer and have easier access, but it is, I think in this last year, we've had a reduction in growers along with a reduction in imports, which is great. We don't like imported flowers. I'm not a massive fan of them at all. They do have their place for certain things, I guess. But, I think if we can grow amazing flowers in New Zealand, it's just, makes it so much nicer to use them and much better for the environment and the sustainability. I do know talking to all of us, talking to the other florists that we deal with, that it's so nice to be able to get locally grown product that you just can't get from the market as well. So there's a lot of things that we grow that we wouldn't get it anywhere other than direct from a grower. So
okay.
Florists are mainly going online and having to order online.
Okay, so they don't actually physically get to see the product.
And then they're having it flown in to Queenstown or it comes on courier and it might take 2 days to get here.
Wow.
So it's a really tricky place for florists to get flowers. And obviously we're also a destination for events and wedding and events. So it's got this sort of unique situation. So one of our advantages was being able to offer something that's here. So if what turns up from the market is damaged or doesn't get supplied, they've got a backup as well.
So let's go back to that, why you came together as a collective. Sorry that I kind of took it the other way, but I think it's great for people to know that it is quite difficult for florists to get fresh flowers there, and especially Queenstown being, I mean, how many people fly in there every week to get married? It's probably like insane. So yeah, interesting. So why did you come together?
So one of the reasons I got in touch with that with Jen and Vera and Anna was I could see that if we were going to make it viable for local florists to buy from us, was to try and get some volume and make it easier for them to buy from us. So by being together, we could combine our flowers and we could share the travel, because to get flowers to Queenstown is still an hour's drive over an Alpine Pass. And if we're all going backwards and forwards each week, that seemed ridiculous. So that was one of, that was sort of some of the thought behind it. And obviously we met up and we get on really well and everyone's really easygoing. So it has just worked out that working together made sense for all of us. We were going to sell more flowers being together than being apart.
And for me, one of the reasons was I constantly kept contacting the other growers, because I do DIY brides. So if I didn't have enough, I constantly had to go and, hey, Jan, do you have like 20 stems of this? Or, hey, Sarah. And it was constant. So in the end, it was like, why don't we just make it work together, so that, you know, when I have an order, just like Jen, when she has an order that's big enough, she just puts it to all of us. And then we basically treat myself and Jen like a florist and just supply what we have.
Yeah. Work your collective. Do you just get an order and then you ask people, or people come to you as the collective? Do you do something every week? How does it work?
Well, initially when we started floating this idea, we over winter the first, so we've been going, this is only our second season as a collective, just starting. So the first winter we sort of met up and got to know each other, and I come from a business background, so I just wanted to kind of tease out a lot of the things I could see could be pain points. So we talked about how would we deal with orders, how would we work together, how would we deal with invoicing, how do we want to, like, all of those things. And that was a really good way to get to know each other and see what everyone's appetite was for the collective. Now that we're running, we basically have a joint email account that all of our orders come into, and we have a wholesale document that sets out our terms of trade. And each week we have a Google Doc that we share between ourselves that we update with our flower availability, and then that gets emailed from our collective email out to our florists that work with us, and then they place their orders by a certain time. And then there's a whole lot of comms that goes on in the background, which is probably why our model wouldn't work if there was we couldn't really add to our collective, the model we've created.
Okay. Why is that, do you think?
Because it'd be too hard to coordinate what we've done. Number of people. Because we get an order in and it'll say, I want five bunches of this, that and the other thing. And then we'll allocate that out between ourselves depending on what volume of flowers each grower's got. And we just try to, within reason, make it even between the growers so that we're all making money. Or if we know someone's got a heap of something flushing, we'll try and push the bulk of it to them time. And I think we had eight growers. And I think you'd end up with politics as well. I think it's much trickier. Different personalities. We're just very, very lucky with the personalities we're working with. We're all quite easygoing people and we need to work well together.
So, did you draw up an agreement? I'm going to probably go all over the place. Did you draw up an agreement before you began on how it would work, or that's just sort of been organic?
No, it was very much like old-fashioned South Island handshake style.
Yeah, okay.
We kind of looked each other in the eye and trust each other's sort of word. And, yeah, you know, we sort of talked about what would we do if someone approached to join our collective, what would we do if we wanted to leave, and those kind of things. We had conversations around that. So we had sort of already navigated that broadly, but and we did have some meeting notes initially, but now it's very much we just trust each other. It's just a circle of trust, really. But I definitely recommend that from my business background. I would say, yes, that's a very sensible thing to have. And, you know, technically we should probably have signed contracts with our florists to say these are our terms of trade. That's what you do if you're a retail business, if you're selling clothes to a retail business or something. Yeah. But we haven't gone that far, but we do send out a document with these are our payment terms, this is what to do if an order's cancelled or there's stock you're not happy with, the flowers you're not happy with, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so that sort of broad guidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just around pricing, how do you price things? You've all sat down and agreed what the prices are going to be, and does this work for you? There's no one paying more for tubers and it sort of doesn't work out, or it does, it's good.
We all, because of our document that we have that we send out for availability, everything's priced the same no matter which grower it comes from. So just it works really well. Yeah. It's fair, and we know that everyone's getting equal payment for what their product is, and I think we all have a fairly even quality of our product. And it just seems to work, I think, doing it that way.
Don't fluctuate. Our prices don't generally change within the season. We sort of, we sat down over winter and set our pricing and then sent that document out to our florists at the start of the season because we obviously really want to build a relationship with our florists. And I know that flower prices is something that all florists are struggling with globally at the moment. So giving them some certainty around pricing was one thing that we were able to do to help build our relationship with them.
What I heard at the start is that you all do grow quite similar things, apart from possibly Anna, who's growing more roses. Is anyone deciding to do something different now?
We mix and match. So we've got Jen with ton of dahlias, obviously. So most of the dahlia orders kind of go to her, and then we top up if we've got, you know, white dahlia that they want 500 off or something so. And then same with tulips, between Sarah and myself, we are the ones doing tulips. Jenna's not even touching them. We kind of all chose a little niche in the market, but then stuff like cosmos, amaranth, any filler, well, what's called a filler flower, we seem to grow all of us in bulk. And to be honest, the amount of orders we've been getting is enough to just spread it out, and even not enough sometimes. So it all goes, most of it goes.
It also acts a little bit like an insurance plan because we're all in slightly different climates, and with annuals the timing can be slightly different depending on when you plant sow your seeds. We always also find that someone's stuff is sort of dwindling off, someone else's is coming on, and so it all just sort of works out. And I probably focus more on perennials than the others because I've already got those established. So it just sort of works. But we've worked out also our florists want certain things, like cosmos and amaranth that Vera mentioned is something that they are just in summer want every week. So that's something that this season we're able to plant more strategically as we're learning what they want to order and try and meet their demand. As you know, it's really tricky because the bride depends on the bride and what the bride's colour palette is. So we're having to cover a lot of bases. We're having to grow a little bit of everything to cover the color palettes as well as the varieties that they might want for that particular week. But
yeah. But and how many florists do you have on your books now?
About 10?
Probably 10-ish.
Between Wanaka and Queenstown, I think.
Yeah.
The market shrunk a lot with COVID. Like, there was probably 10 florists almost in Wanaka before COVID.
Yeah.
And sort of only 3 or 4 operating out of Wanaka now. But Jen's one of the main ones, and she's pulled right back. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. I don't know where all the suppliers are going to come from for the wedding season this season. I think it's going to be pretty challenging for the suppliers locally in Queenstown and Wanaka.
Yeah.
There's multiple weddings every weekend.
Yeah.
And during the week, isn't it, too? It's not just the weekends, I think, now as well.
Yes.
Yeah. At the beginning, that there's been a reduction in growers. Why is that? Have people just moved on? Have people sold land? Did it just become too expensive?
My understanding is that these were the commercial growers.
Okay.
Was once the events, because our floristry industry is so small in New Zealand, once the events stopped, it really, really impacted them. They just couldn't keep going.
Mm.
An events industry stopping that had a major impact on the New Zealand floristry industry.
Yeah. So I think I'm just going to segue in here that in New Zealand, although you weren't in a full lockdown, people were not allowed to travel to New Zealand. So being such a tourism destination and such a destination for weddings and all of those sorts of things, it really did affect your economy, didn't it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, I was probably doing 50 or 60 weddings a summer, and COVID hit, and then it went down to pretty much zilch. I probably would say 95% of my clients are international. So, yeah, for Queenstown Lakes area, that especially, it's had a huge impact.
Yeah.
The thing in New Zealand is Kiwi brides don't tend to spend the same dollar value on flowers. The bulk of the floristry work is international brides, and we get a huge number from Australia. So not allowing Australians into New Zealand during COVID meant that the industry was just sort of turned off overnight here.
Yeah, tough. I know New Zealand is so different for weddings. I mean, I got married in New Zealand, and my husband still tells the story of how, like, people wanted us to take things back and give us money. Like, I don't know, for let's say, like, our booze, for example, they're like, if you don't drink it all, you can bring it back and we'll give you your money back. And he was just like, what is going on? And, yeah, people were just opening up their gardens to let us cut things, and I guess that is, I don't know, it's just that kind of Kiwi hospitality, but hard when you're a florist and you're like, hey, I want to make money from New Zealand weddings. I decided to start the collective up in COVID, and been going. How's it grown since you decided over that period to start up?
For me, and I think I speak for everyone, it's been great. It's allowed me to go from, oh my God, it's a hobby, I kind of don't know if I can actually do this full time, to quit my job and actually do this full time. I mean, I had a baby in between of that. So I went on maternity leave and trialed it out being full time, and then basically I quit the job. So
yeah, amazing.
Yeah, so it's been awesome to be backed up by amazing growers, and as a florist as well, to have that inside knowledge, because I was selling things to Jen before the collective, and I probably am not very proud of what I was selling to her, because the quality was just like, oh, borderline, probably shouldn't be selling this. And so just the knowledge of the industry and what industry wants was great. And then also the, you know, the backup of other growers like Sarah and Anna, where I can say yes to big orders now, for my brides, for example, or to a florist that doesn't know about the collective but probably knows about me or something. I can say, yep, sure, and then draw the bulk from this lady's. And it's been amazing to just share the knowledge, share the drive to Queenstown, yeah. And have a little bit more organization, which is Sarah's forte. She actually organized us.
So you're saying the benefits are sort of being able to bounce off each other. And I guess there is this huge topic about sort of coming out now about farmer burnout and it being quite an isolating industry to be in, and then also just to be working so hard and sometimes not sell your flowers, or they get a disease or whatever, go through. I guess having something like a collective, it really does, it makes you not so isolated. And also if you have something like that, you're still able to sell a few of your bunches through the collective. Is that how you find it?
The biggest thing has been that support and actually the friendships we've built and being able to share our knowledge and share our plants and not be competing against each other and worried what the next person's up to. That's been really, really nice to have that. Definitely working together, as that support network has been amazing.
That's massive, isn't it?
Yeah. And now we can share buying and like we can buy in plugs and all sorts of things together.
Yeah,
that was going to be one of my questions, actually. Yeah. It's about do you buy together? Yeah, great.
So we do combine, particularly for specialist things like ranunculus and anemones. There's a girl, Sarah, who's been bringing in some gorgeous varieties. I'm sure you'll be talking to her. But so we're able to order and get them grown and then sent down to us, which makes a big difference as well.
Because we don't necessarily need huge amounts because we don't all have massive growing space. So
yeah,
by sharing it, it's kind of we can divvy it all up and we've all got a bit of each thing.
Yes.
And if one person gets frosted, the other two have still got some.
Fabulous. So what has been the biggest learning curve about getting into a collective? What would you say to other people who hear this story and think, wow, this sounds amazing. What's been the biggest thing to try and work out, the biggest learning curve?
One of the great things has been the fact that we know we're not taking flowers to Queenstown and hope that someone's going to buy them out of the back of our car. We already know that they're sold. Mm. And if we haven't sold them there, we can then use other ways. So I sell direct to locals, so does Vera. So there's other ways that I can exit my flowers and they're not being cut for no reason. Put time and energy into that. So that's one of the things I would say. Think about what model of collective you want to set up. I'd really think about that. I would really get to know the people you're going into the collective with. Because sometimes there's politics within the collective. So I guess it's just that really important part of having good communication and talking through a lot of the different scenarios that could happen with your group and having a document or having that fleshed out before you start your collective so that you're all on the same page. You know, if someone wants to exit or enter your collective, how does it work? How do you do your payments? How do you allocate the orders? Or are you going to even have pre-orders like we do? So that would be another key thing to think about. And then is strategically decided against being the Wanaka Flower Collective. We originally were thinking that, but we soon realised we weren't going to be able to include other members.
Yeah.
Model we went down with, so that's why we went with a specific name, so that if in time someone wanted to set up a Wanaka Flower Collective, they could. That was open to anyone joining.
Does everyone feel the same? Is there anybody else that sort of learnt something from the collective experience that you'd like to share?
I think just getting to know each other really first as well. Yeah. Like we had maybe 6 months before we went down the track of starting the collective. So we kind of had an idea that our personalities would gel. I think that's important before, because otherwise, I think if we had somebody that was included that we didn't get on with personally, then it would be difficult.
It would be very difficult.
Yeah. I think we are very fortunate in the fact that we do get on and we're all pretty laid back. And
the other really important thing is to talk to your florists and understand what they want and need, because it's all well and good creating a collective and growing all the flowers, but if you're not providing a service or something, a product that they want, you're going to be struggling from the start. So I was quite fortunate to sort of piggyback on relationships that Jen and Vera and Anna already had with local florists. And I mean, our type of flowers aren't for everyone. So find your people, find the people who love locally grown, they love the wiggly, they love the quirky, they love the interesting perennials, and just accept that some people that isn't their style of floristry and your flowers aren't for them, and that's okay too. They've got their markets where they source.
So do you sell only direct to florists, or would you sell just to the general public, is what I'm trying to say?
Interestingly, when we first set up, we our vision was actually to have sort of three prongs to our business as a collective, but we thought we'd just start with the florist element, the wholesale element first.
Yeah.
But we did also talk about the option of having a workshop piece and also doing local flowers together. So with our excess flowers, combining them all once a week and doing bunches within Wanaka. Obviously, the other two elements of our collective haven't got off the ground because we ended up too busy with just supplying florists at this stage.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's scope that we can do that, and it was something that we've talked about. So there's room to grow if we find extra time in our calendars.
Yeah, amazing. So, what has been the best part? Because that was sort of what you have learned and what your knowledge you would like to share, but for each of you, maybe just give me a sentence or a little bit about what you've gained from being part of a collective personally.
Finding some people who actually love the same things that you do and are happy to sit and have a conversation for an hour and a half about growing flowers and obsessing over new varieties that are coming in. I think that's probably, for me, that's the biggest thing, is finding other people that have as much passion about it as I do.
Yeah.
My thing.
Great.
For me was the support and also the finding friends, basically. I'm not a local in Wanaka. I wasn't born and bred here. Wasn't even born and bred in New Zealand. Okay. So it was great to follow my dream and then find people who actually support and do not the same, but you know, do things their way, but love the same things that I do.
And
just keep supporting each other and finding time for each other, really, because it is busy. You know, farmers burn out and that sort of stuff, and you could feel it. You know, we all came in here today going, oh my god, what is tomorrow for all the florists? So it's like, oh, this is packing and all this, but you know, a time to actually talk about it and to support each other through it, it's great.
I think it's a common theme that we've already mentioned, that having that peer relationship was awesome. But the other thing I've really liked is seeing that, because I've always believed in a rising tide floats all boats, and seeing that actually working together rather than competing against each other or worrying about what each other are doing has actually grown the demand for our flowers, and that's been really satisfying. Seeing that as we're still very early on, we're only in our second season, but we've got really great relationships. We love our local florists, they've been super supportive, and we really hope we can keep building on that and start really tailoring what we grow to suit how they design and how they work as well.
inspires you the most in the, let's just do within the New Zealand industry, and what is something that you would like? So two questions. Sorry, I always do a double question. Always, it gets me in the end because I'm like, what questions are we doing? What are we doing? I've even forgotten. Who inspires you most within like the New Zealand industry? And also, what's your favorite snack to have on the farm?
Oh my
god, snack. Yeah, I know. I just
also about the favorite snack.
You can say Whittaker's chocolate if you like.
I'll start with a snack. So we actually the plot that I grow on is in the middle of my father-in-law's sheep and beef farm, but he kindly allowed me to extend my flower plot, and now we have a berry patch. So my favorite snack is just going in strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, whatever goes. We just stuff
it. Amazing.
Yeah. But in terms of who inspires me, honestly, this collective has really, really inspired me to keep going and to keep growing and to keep expanding. As much as my partner wants me to just stay within the borders of the rabbit fence plot. I'm going to keep planting around it.
Yeah, good, good.
So, yeah, and but I mean, back in the day when I first started it as a hobby, I did do a florette online workshop.
Okay, yeah.
And that was just... it's like a dream. It's like, wow, she's doing. I know she's not in New Zealand, but that was just kind of like, wow.
Yeah.
I want to be that. But now that I'm looking at what she's doing, I'm like, oh, no, it's too much.
I think she has a lot of people working for her.
So. Yeah. And then in terms of inside New Zealand, I pretty much follow every single grower on Instagram. It's just really cool to see everyone doing their own thing, but at the same time working together in a way. And it's really cool to text or, you know, to call any grower in New Zealand and go, hey, if I'm in Dunedin, for example, just about 2-3 hour drive from here, can I come and get your flowers because I've got an event, you know, next day or something like that. And they always say yes or, you know, try to accommodate. So,
yeah,
just the whole New Zealand flower community, really. I haven't really met anyone not nice or not inspiring, to be honest.
Yeah.
They all want to help and pitch in and support. So,
yeah. It's that Kiwi spirit, right?
Yeah,
definitely. Okay. Jen, do you want to go with who inspires you?
I haven't actually got anyone specific. I think it's the whole floral industry. It's not just growers, it's florists, it's having been in the floral industry itself for so long, you just see so many different people who do things differently, and it just kind of sparks ideas and what have you. So that's really, there's not an individual grower or florist or anything that I think, oh my gosh, that's what makes me get up in the morning. It's just as a whole. So, and yeah.
Do you have a favorite snack?
I get time to.
The
one thing that I do probably have is nuts. Really random. I'm not a huge sweet tooth or anything like that.
Yeah, good.
On the run, keeps you going. Yeah,
nice. And Sarah, what about you?
Inspires me. I'm really like these girls. It's the industry. We're so lucky. Everyone is lovely. I have so many conversations with people I've never even met face to face, and they're so generous with their knowledge. It's a really amazing industry to be part of. I'm really inspired by a florist. It's really exciting seeing your flower. I just opened up Instagram this morning and seeing a bouquet, and I could literally pick out the flowers we supplied 2 days ago in that bouquet. And that's really cool. And I guess all our supporters, all the flower lovers out there that send us messages and keep us growing. It's really cool seeing how much joy it brings to them. So
yeah. And do you have a favorite snack? I'm asking about the snack thing because I just found Philippa Cameron's Instagram account, which is What's for Smoko, and it's inspired me to make really delicious snacks. So anyway, what's your favourite snack?
Back to your high country roots of
smoko. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm quite lucky. I often get to go. I've got this unique situation where I get to go in and have lunch or morning tea with my family. So with my parents, my dad still farms our high country station, and my brother and his wife and children farm alongside them. So often I'm having morning tea with both of them. So it's whatever's going on the farm.
Yeah, great. That I haven't asked you that you really wanted to get across about what you do in your collective, anything that you think is unique to New Zealand that you wanted to share?
Anything. Guarantee we'll finish this call though and we'll go, oh, we should have said that.
I know, it's always the way.
On top of my head, I can't think of anything. What about you, ladies?
Yeah. No, I think it's, as you've already talked about, it's the nuances of the New Zealand market. Like, we're so dependent on the event, wedding and events, that destination wedding locations like us are so far from a flower market. And I mean, a proper auction style market, the markets you have in Melbourne, we just don't really exist in New Zealand.
Even like the market I buy from, there's like, if you go to Dunedin, there's nothing.
I've done a couple of weddings in New Zealand and I found it so hard. To get flowers. There was one wholesaler I brought from in Timaru and it was like an online kind of situation and it all got couriered down, which I'd never had to do before. And I opened the back of the truck and I cried. I was like, what is this that I've just ordered? It was so difficult. So I can completely understand how a collective like this in that situation is just going to go from strength to strength. And I think it sounds that you've all got the right attributes and kind of the right things going on to make this set. It already is. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can't wait to come and see all of your farms and to be at one of those workshops.
Come run one for us.
Yeah, all of the things in the future. Thank you so much for being part of Dish the Dirt, and I hope that you have a wonderful day. And I don't know, the weather's nice over there. It's for once sunny here without rain, so yay.
Hey, and thank you so much for all you do. I mean, we all listen to your podcast and it's so inspiring hearing what all the growers are doing over in Australia, and we're learning so much about, because although our climates can be different, there's parts of Australia that are quite similar as well. So it's really awesome hearing everyone's stories.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's nice to get everyone's stories out there, I think, and just to for people to understand that there are people people and families behind the flowers. Are you taking on any more florists at the moment?
Is it
new books?
On yes.
Anybody? Okay. We always say yes, and then
as long as they pay.
Yeah. So how would they get in touch with you?
Instagram or we've got a website, threevalleyflowerfarms.com, or and on there's our email, hello@threevalleyfarms.com or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you much. Go and enjoy your day. Well, afternoon now for you. Thank you so much for sharing your story on Dish the Dirt. It was wonderful to have you on. I hope that lots of people out there get something from this. I definitely think they will. And yeah, it was an absolute pleasure. So thank you to Three Valleys Flower Farms, and you can get in touch with them at hello@threevalleysflowerfarms.com or check them out on Instagram. That's all for this week. I really hope everyone out there is having a lot of sunshine, a lot of fun, and keep being blooming fabulous.